Good morning, everyone. Please pray with me. Oh, Heavenly Father, Divine Mother,
Beloved Jesus Christ,
Blessed Master, Saints and Sages of all religions, I bow to all of you. Free my life from all obstacles. And give me physical, mental, and spiritual development. Make my mind thy temple.
Make my heart thy altar.
Make my love thy home.
Be thou the only King.
Reigning on the throne of my consciousness. To be here this morning. It feels like a spring day, doesn't it? I feel so privileged to have inherited Mother's library and along with it many of Master's original writings. One of those manuscripts is recorded talks of his on the life and meaning of Patanjali. Patanjali was a tremendous yogi. He was a householder yogi, married. There's some dispute as to exactly when he lived, ranging anywhere before 300 or 400 years B.C. to 300 or 400 years A.D. And his aphorisms, short little sayings, have been handed down through time, and they have inspired innumerable generations of truth seekers. And here Master's commentary begins with a question. What is the definition of vritti, that is V-R-I-T-T-I, or the wave of feeling? What is the definition of vritti, or wave of feeling? And the answer is, the reaction of human feeling when it contacts material senses. That is, on perceiving a black cat, the feelings of most people of the West become superstitiously inclined, resulting in probable exclamation like this, I will have bad luck today, for a black cat has crossed my path. Now, if you saw a black cat and you recognized that it crossed your path, that was all right. But out of that experience, the feeling says, I will have bad luck today. That is the whole trouble. It lies in our feeling. Now, this feeling classifies all human experience into two fields. One, likable experiences. Two, disliked experiences. According to the law of delusive relativity, the human feeling creates likes and dislikes and sees the whole world filled with likable and disagreeable objects. This duality of consciousness prevents the perception of the presence of the undiluted one, blissful spirit. I'll say that again. This duality of consciousness prevents the perception of the presence of one undiluted, blissful spirit. Now, if you have no likes or dislikes, would you be an automaton? No, you would be like God. I can't tell you the number of people that I talk to who have this vague or not so vague impression that to live the impersonal life or to not have attachments in this world would lead you to be a cold machine in which you would have no feeling, you would have no response to this world, you would have no real liveliness of spirit. And this is absolutely a misinterpretation of these teachings, as Master points out here. It is these waves of likes and dislikes that keeps us on the roller coaster of life. And what we find out when we begin to calm these waves of likes and dislikes is that a deeper presence begins to make itself known. As we experiment with these different states of consciousness, we realize that the likes and dislikes keeps us ignorant of this deeper state of spirit. Now, what do we experience as we enter into the deeper feeling of God experience? We feel ourselves, number one, coming into a state of peace, a great peace that surpasses all understanding, as it says in the Bible. And this peace begins to resonate throughout us. And then there is a joy that comes out, bubbling out like an eternal spring of joy that comes up into the heart and into the mind. So we're feeling peace, we're feeling joy, and an enlightenment of the brain comes. We feel and see a light. Now, these things are difficult to describe because if you have not experienced them, you don't know exactly how to relate to it. You can try to imagine it. But imagining and experiencing it are two completely different things. So in the beginning, it's described to us so that we know what we're aspiring for, so we know what we're going towards. So we can begin to see, when we have the experiences, that there are certain hallmarks to it, and we can test the experiences by the descriptions that have been given to us. And as we deepen into those quality of experiences, we'll find that more and more is revealed to us as we go along. But as long as we are inundated and tossed about like a small boat on these waves of likes and dislikes, there is no way that we can experience that deeper nature of spirit, that having that God experience. And how easy that is to come to us, how easy it is to get deluded by this. And we know it because if we're perhaps having a meditation and a wonderful meditation one day, all we have to do is start interacting with the world. Suddenly our consciousness is drawn out into the world and we lose it. And sometimes we are very sorry for it. Sometimes we don't even realize that we've lost it till much later. And we realize how anxious we become. We realize how fearful we become. We realize how many desires have cropped up inside of us. So when you see the world like God, then you have been lifted up into that God experience. And Master continues, for example, close your eyes and you will think of all the things you have not liked throughout your life. That is the cause of bondage. For then you reason, if I had all the good things all the time, how happy I would be. And how true this is, isn't it, is that we imagine how we could have everything just going smoothly. If I just didn't have this boss who gave me a hard time, if I didn't have any money problems, if my spouse treated me better, if my children were better behaved, or if I had a spouse, if I had children, all these imaginings come to us, then I would be happy. And it's always around the corner, isn't it? It's always just around the corner. Yeah, I have a little bit of happiness now, but you know what? It's not complete. It's not whole. I'm not really accepting of everything that's given to me. So we're always imagining how perfect and how beautiful life will be when we get everything smoothed out. And some people lose faith that that can happen here on earth, but they imagine a heaven. And in that heaven, everything is perfectly smooth and peaceful and happy. And when you die, that's where you go. And yet, how can that be if there is the law of cause and effect, as Jesus talks about it? As you sow, so shall you reap. And if you've not yet come into that state of consciousness while living, why would you automatically assume it when you die? Wouldn't you take yourself with you? Wouldn't you take your fears? Wouldn't you take your desires? Wouldn't you take your likes and dislikes with you? And what if you meet somebody in heaven that you didn't like here on earth? Are you automatically going to like them? Are you automatically going to trust them? It's not logical. It doesn't make any sense. There's the story of Yudhishthira, who is the oldest Pandava brothers, and the Pandavas are the good guys. They're the guys in the white hats. And he lives a very virtuous life. But he goes up into heaven, and there he sees Duryodhana, his cousin. And he sees them there eating grapes and laughing and being happy. And he asks the question, how can this be? This man was responsible for the needless deaths and suffering of millions and millions of people. And here he is enjoying the fruits of heaven? I don't want anything to do with a heaven that's like that. And you see, Yudhishthira represents the fifth chakra. And the fifth chakra is discrimination between the goats and the sheep, the good and the bad, truth and non-truth. Dharma, and the knowledge of Dharma. The only problem is that if you're completely wedded to Dharma and what is right, then you will always be in that world of duality. That's very much in the world of duality, and while it's necessary for us to gain a clear apprehension of good and bad, it can also limit us if that becomes our supreme God. I know somebody who becomes very self-righteous about what he considers the injustices and the iniquities in this world. And yet in his own discussions and as he talks about things, he stretches the truth, he exaggerates, and he outright lies in order to tell a good story. And the lies tend to grow over time. And yet he's absolutely indignant when he perceives somebody else may be lying to him or somehow covering up some of the truth of something. Now, you can't have it both ways. If you're going to be attuning yourself to Dharma, first of all, you have to look to your own actions. There are many people who look out on this world and they become very angry and indignant about what they see, and sometimes rightfully so. It's a righteous anger. But unless that's a corresponding with an equal purging out of those iniquities within yourself, then that is hypocrisy. And so you need to hold yourselves at least to as high of a standard as you hold this world to. And unless you are really working on yourself and trying to purge yourself of those things, you are a hypocrite. So we must see to it that we are really working on ourselves and trying to apply these truths. Learning the truth without applying it is worse than just do nothing. It is a pure negative, because now you know the truth, and yet you're not applying it. Now, we all fall short of the goal, and none of us live that life perfectly all the time. So you have to adjust yourself in that way. You can't be so hard on yourself that you're always feeling terrible about yourself. That's not helpful either. But we always have to be bending effort. We always have to be striving for that perfection. Jesus said, "Be ye perfect, even as your Father in heaven is perfect." But you look inside of yourself and you say, "How in the world am I ever going to achieve perfection? I'm so far from that." And yet that's not really true. When you enter into the stillness, when you go beyond these alternating waves of vritti, of good and bad, of high and low, and you enter into that definite stillness and peace, in that moment, and it may be only a moment, but in that moment you are in the perfection of God. You are in that perfection. Now that may only last a fleeting moment, but you have touched the hem of God there. You have touched the fabric out of which God's soul, God's spirit is made. And you can know then what you're really aspiring for. So we have to go beyond even this fantasy that we all have, that if my life were just perfect, then I could be happy, then I could be peaceful. It's true for all of us that we've entertained that. I remember when I was a child and I used to pray to God, "Give me perfect grades, high grades, and lots of friends." I was maybe 6 or 7 years old at the time, maybe a little older. I didn't want to do anything for the grades or for the friends. I just wanted them handed to me. And of course, that's not the way that it works. It's just not handed. We have to apply these things. There's somebody who, in starting up a business, and they had a capital to work with. Now, when I started into a business, I talked around to different businessmen. And this was a nursery business that we were starting up. And this man was very experienced, and he said, you know, I don't buy expensive machinery. I go out and rent it. Now, I spend a lot of money for rentals through a season. But because it's seasonal at the end of the season, I don't have all this machinery sitting around. I don't have to repair it. I don't have to do anything with it. I return it. They repair it, and they keep it in good condition. And he said, that works out more economically for me than to go out and buy a lot of expensive machinery that I only use part way through the year. And there are those who will start out a business. And they go out and they buy the most expensive machinery. They like it. It's shiny. It's new. It costs a lot of money. And they're taking their sparse capital and they're going out and buying these new things. Because they haven't understood that they have to create the business first. They have to have the flow. And they may think in the back of their minds, well, God will just take care of me. But we can't be foolish in this world and do things that are not economical, things that do not recognize the economics of this world, and just depend on God to take care of the loose details that we haven't bothered attending to. We have to be wise in this world. We have to be savvy to this world. But this should not, then, cut us off from feeling that God is our supply. It's a difficult subject to get the right balance on, but we have to be sincere. But we can't just go out and live any kind of life we want and then say, well, God will take care of me. Our first and foremost responsibility is attunement with God. Now that is a serious commitment. And it is something that we really have to work for and strive for. It's just not that every passing thought in our ordinary consciousness is coming from God. We know the difference. We know when something comes from us from high above and inspires us, lifts us up, transforms us. We feel it with every part of our being. We know that that has come from the superconscious mind. But when we think that every passing whimsy is coming from God, no way, not unless we have paid the price. Now, in Papa's case, he had dedicated himself heart, mind, and soul to God. And whatever God said, he was willing to do. But does that describe most of us? Most of us, well, we want the best things in life. And we just want God to provide them. Without having to pay the price of admission, which is absolute and total surrender to the Infinite One. Now, when we do that, all doors are open. All supply comes to us, unbidden. But we cannot have one without the other. We must put God first. We must put God first. So then the Lord says, you have to reincarnate again to have those things, just because of the things you like. You imagine somebody who wants to be extremely wealthy, maybe the most wealthy person in the world. Well, there's only one. There's only one most wealthy person in the world. And how many times have they sentenced themselves to come back by having that strong desire? I want to be the most wealthy. I want to have the most things. I wanted to be counted among the rich and the famous. And when that is the desire that drives you, that desire must be fulfilled. And so you come back again and again and again as you refine your consciousness and attune it so that you can grow into that most famous, that richest, that smartest, whatever it is that you have imagined for yourself, that most popular. And you have to earn that. You have to grow into it. And so you have to keep coming back again and again until you have that. It's not just something that will automatically be handed to you. Continuing with Master, that is the way we are woven into the net of feelings and we can't get out. That is the cause of our not finding God the right way. And you see this sometimes with, it's not all, but some of the positive thinking and other kinds of programs. Well, if you don't like what you have, you just change it. You change your thought, you change your reality. And to some degree, there is a truth in that, but it's not the absolute truth. Because you are living with the reverberations of all of your past. And if there are unfulfilled karma within your past, you're going to be living with that. And so it's not just a matter of changing your current day thinking and you change everything else. Now, I say that, and yet on the other side of my mouth, I will say, you change your thoughts, you will change your life. And so when you open yourself to prosperity, when you feel that flow of prosperity coming to you, you are enacting that law of cause and effect. But the fact that it may not come right away, or you may not have everything that you wish for right away, is not because the law is not effective. There is just more to the law than a rather simplistic kind of thinking, and then you become that. We know that that's not true, because people start out in that and they'll see some results. They'll see things coming to them. And it is because they have had faith in that law. They're enacting that law. But that law is incomplete yet in them. And they have doubts within their mind. They have dark corners that have not yet been completely exposed to the light. And as a result, they run into difficulties, they run into problems, and then they doubt whether the law that they've been taught is true or not. The law is true, but they have not yet been able to completely enact it. So this is something to remember when we are looking at changing our lives. This chitwa, or feeling, is likened unto a squeamish lady who sits in the mansion of the mind, classifying sensations as likable or disagreeable as they enter through the channels of the five senses of hearing, smell, touch, taste, and sight. Thus, the feeling becomes personal and makes the ego attached to the world. You are too personal with the world. That attitude of attachment has brought all the miseries. Now, Master oftentimes talks about becoming too intimate with people, too presumptuous. And you become too personal. And what happens when you do that? You lose respect for the individual. You say things that don't show a proper degree of respect. And so when you're overly personal, when you're overly familiar with this world, you think that you're here to live. You think that you're here forever, but it's not true. We know that that's not true by the evidence that we see around us, because people die every day. And we know that one day we'll come to that last day of our life. And yet we act as if that is not true. In the Vedas, they have the story of the man who is walking along on his path, and suddenly he comes to a cliffside, and he's not paying very much attention. So he doesn't realize how close he is to the cliff. And suddenly a tiger comes up behind him, and he's very afraid, and he jumps. And unwittingly, he jumps off of the cliff. And he grabs onto some tree roots. That's the only thing that's between him and hundreds of feet of death. And so he's clinging on to the roots there. And then he notices up above him that there's a mouse. And the mouse is chewing on the roots that are holding him and supporting him. Well, he's in real trouble now, because he knows it's just a matter of time before that's... Now, a bird is flying over. This is a wonderful story, isn't it? A bird is flying over. And he happens to have a little bit of honey attached to him, and the honey drops from the bird and falls onto the branch. He looks up and he says, "Oh, some honey, how lovely." And he reaches up to taste the honey. He's in all of this danger, you see. Everything, left, right, and center, front and behind, he's got danger all around him. But he reaches out for the honey. Oh, what a wonderful taste that honey is. Oh, that's wonderful. That's how strong the senses are. That's how strong our attachment is to this world. And you think at the last moment that you'll just be able to have your mind on God and you'll go on. But that's not exactly what happens. Whatever is in the subconscious mind in forms of desires and fears, they suddenly come up to your conscious mind. That's what you're thinking of. That's what's at the surface when you leave this body. And when those desires come up, when those fears come up, you have now committed yourself to another lifetime, to working those things out, because those particular desires and those particular fears can only be worked out in this material realm. And only if you have mastered yourself and you have brought still those alternating vritti waves of good and bad, of like and dislike, can you free yourself at that moment into the heavenly consciousness and never come back involuntarily ever again? In fact, you are completely free at that point. All yogis who have controlled their feeling live in the world cognizing sensations in an academic way without being affected or excited by them. You must live in this world with complete control feeling. Now, again, it can come up in the mind, wouldn't that be a dry life? What it doesn't state is the positive effect that you do feel, this tremendous sense of peace and joy that begins to well up in you, and an inner sense of direction of what is good and what is bad, what is right and what is wrong. There were some Kriyabhan devotees who were going to buy a new condominium. And I had a feeling at the time that they are going to make a mistake. And so I directed them towards somebody whose area of expertise it is around what are called these leaky condos. And he gave them a very clear picture of what they should and should not do. And that if they did the wrong thing, they could end up with one of these leaky condos. Well, if you do that, you're on the hook for whatever it costs to repair the entire building, and they have to strip the entire building down and rebuild it. Not all the way, but all the exterior and everything. And they went on and ignored the advice, and it costed them many, many tens of thousands of dollars in the end. When you have this inner stillness, there's an inner knowing that comes to you. Now, you feel it when it happens. I don't claim that everything that I say is a high truth that comes from God. In fact, God has made it his business to take away many of the intelligence that I had before. And it's because I know that I had a pride in that intelligence. I had a pride in that mind, and that pride had to be broken. And it's embarrassing and it's humbling when God takes away all your thoughts and you can't think a thought for the life of yourself. You can't remember a certain thing because God has just simply taken it away, and you know darn well you know it, but it's gone. And God has done this in order to bring me into a state of total and complete surrender, that I depend on God even for my thoughts, even for my memory, absolutely everything. I took some comfort that in the Gita, Krishna says that he is responsible for memory, so I put him on the hook for it, took myself off the hook for it. But it's difficult when you're in the midst of something and God will not allow your mind to work. And yet you are still conscious, you're still aware, you're still able in some ways to operate in this world, but in some areas and categories you're not able to operate. There was a time when I could not operate my checking account, my balance. I couldn't write checks. I had money in the account. And there are times when I wasn't writing checks to cover my expenses, to cover my bills. I couldn't bring myself to do it. It's a simple thing. You can train a young child to write out checks, and yet here I was incapable of doing it. I had to ask for help. I had to ask for somebody to do this for me. Now, that's humbling, I can assure you. And yet, this is what happened for me, because I had an inordinate amount of pride. There's a story of Krishna. And he was asked by these kings who were imprisoned by a very powerful king, Jarasandha. And Jarasandha had captured these other kings and imprisoned them. And so, due to their request, he went about getting them out of jail, so to speak. And he had to defeat Jarasandha in order to do this. And when he sprung out the kings, they all pranamed and bowed at his feet. Now, these are all great kings in their own right, but they're pranaming at Krishna's feet. And they said, "We recognize now how prideful and how conceited we became in having all this wealth and power and prestige, and how needed it was for us to be humbled. And what we ask for now is that we always be in remembrance of you." And Krishna accepted that. And it changed their lives. And so when they got out of this prison, they were now very, very reliant upon the divine consciousness to direct them, to hold them. But you see, when we're filled with pride and conceit, we can't have that. And just the flip side of that coin on the ego is fear and loathing. And there are people who are filled with fear, but it's just an ego reaction to this world. And you know, we don't like to hear that very much, because sometimes we think, oh, I'm fearful and, you know, I'm shy. And we don't think of it in the same category as pride and conceit. In fact, we think we're the furthest thing from that. But when we think that we're the flip side of the coin of the ego, of pride and conceit, it puts a fly in the ointment. We don't like that very much. And it spurs us to get out of it. This is the ego. When we feel God, we feel calm. We feel clear in our minds. We know what we're doing, and we know we go about doing it. When Jesus was but 12 years old, he felt that inner direction. He was in the temple. He was both teaching and he was learning. And he was completely calm, and his parents came and took him to task. They had been frantic for him. Where were you? I was about my father's business. What clarity to have. And he wasn't just being frivolous. He just didn't wander off. He just didn't want some cotton candy and, you know, went for that. He was about a higher duty, a higher order of things. And, of course, Jesus was one of the great avatars, incarnations of divinity that have ever visited this earth. And so he came complete with that knowledge and that understanding. And it's a wonderful life to meditate on and to contemplate. So Master says you must live in this world with complete control feeling. Those who respond more, that is, those who can respond more to the guru, to him as the guru, I can do more for. The disciple who appreciates more, I can help more. Not that the master gives more, but he receives what the master gives. And it's a very interesting story of Jesus walking through the crowd. There's many people who are hungering for him or reaching out to touch him because they believe that he has this higher power that's flowing through him. So there's all these hundreds of people who are reaching out, touching him, crying out to him. And suddenly Jesus turns around and he says, "Who just touched me?" Oh, what a question. All the crowd is reaching out to touch him. And the disciple says, "What do you mean? There are hundreds of people touching you. What do you mean, who touched me? I just felt virtue go out from me. Who just touched me?" And I've had this experience many, many times where I've felt virtue go out from me. It's a spiritual power that goes out from you. And I know that somebody is thinking on me, or perhaps I'm concentrating on them, and I feel that spiritual power go out. Now, there's no sense of ego in it, because it's very clear to my mind that it's not me, it's not the individual me. I am a witness to what's occurring. And that power goes out, and I feel it go out. And I feel it make the change. And it's wonderful, and it's uplifting. So I know what Master means, at least to some degree here. And it's not that the Guru's intention is any less with anybody else. There are those who I speak to and I talk to, and I know that the words are only penetrating so far, that there's resistance there, or there's a lack of understanding there. I was talking to a devotee yesterday, and as I said many of the same things I had said many, many times to him. But suddenly his eyes were opened up, and he got it on a brand new level. He understood it now. Now, it's not that all those other times of speaking to him were a waste. That was preparing the ground. Many times you'll hear me repeat things. But it's not because it's a lack of other things to say. It's because those are the things you need to hear. And they need to be repeated. They need to be impregnated into your mind so that the seed can go deep. so that the ground can be prepared so that that seed can gain full fruition. I've told you before that when I heard Mother speak, there are many times when I heard her repeat stories. And it came to my mind, I want to be able to hear that story from the same state of consciousness that she's speaking it from. Now, that was a big challenge, and it continues to be a big challenge for me. Can I hear it? Mother was tremendous. I want to tell you, and I am here to tell you. She wasn't known all over this world in the way that some are known. She didn't have fame in that way. Somebody once asked me when I was telling them about Mother, was she famous? And I said, well, to a small group of people, she's very famous. And she was like that. She was somebody the most important influence in my life. And she was famous in my life, but it wasn't hers to go out during her lifetime in that way to all the world. But a realized master's life cannot be measured in terms of how many people know about them. That's not the point. The point is their ability to lift the consciousness up into divine realms. I always felt that this was Mother's greatest power. This was her greatest gift. This was the greatest miracle. Was that ability to transform the consciousness. Now, sometimes it was difficult. Sometimes I'd come away and I'd have a headache because the power of God was flowing so much through Mother. And it was penetrating through me and it was changing the cells of my being. But I had to be open to it, you see. It's not something I could just kind of mindlessly show up for. I remember there was one disciple of Mother's, and he's a wonderful, sincere man in many ways. He worked hard all day, and it would be on a Wednesday night. This is when we were meeting at Bonnie's. And there is a lazy boy kind of easy chair that was back in the dining room area. And it's kind of dark back there. And he'd get back there and he'd crank that chair back into the reclined position. I thought, no, don't do it. And within minutes, the snorers were starting to emit from there. Now, I'm sure he got some benefit for just making the effort to come, but he didn't get the full benefit because he had put himself into this reclined position. So you have to be open and you have to be alert. You have to be aware. But when you are, that virtue can flow out to you. And what a change that can make. This kind of change we're talking about is no small potatoes. It's big stuff because it touches every aspect of your being. And there is no transformation, there is no challenge in this life that will touch every aspect of your life except for the spiritual, because it takes you the deepest, it makes you the highest, and it challenges you in the transformation of every particle of your being. And do not rest satisfied until light shines out from every part of your being and there is no darkened corners. There is no country unexplored. There is nothing that is left aside. Be settle for nothing less than absolute and total transformation. Jesus was a master yogi who demonstrated his control of chitva. When he cognized the touch sensation piercing of nails on the cross, and perhaps you can just imagine, he's already gone through a really rough time of it. He's exhausted. And then suddenly they're nailing these nails into his skin. You can imagine the pain and the shock that goes with them. Instead of being overcome by disliking, anger, feeling, you can say he is totally justified. He was wrongly accused. He's wrongly held up. Why is this happening? They're taking my life. It's unfair. You can imagine any one of us having those kinds of thoughts. What will happen? Fear of death. All of it. Instead of being overcome by the disliking, anger, feeling, he calmly said, Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do. They know not what they do. He had perfect control of feeling, of chitva. Jesus only cognized that those who crucified him were inviting the punishment of bad karma. If Jesus had no control of feeling, he would have cursed them, and thus would have kept himself earthbound through hate. Through hate. He would have had to reincarnate again to control his feelings and thus separate the ever-blessed soul from the bondages of feeling which causes likes and dislikes. He would have had to reincarnate again to control his feelings and thus separate the ever-blessed soul from bondages of feeling which causes likes and dislikes. Now, this does not mean that you have no response or no reaction in the world. It doesn't even mean that you don't have likes and dislikes. The difference is, for the realized being, is that there is a superordinate quality that goes beyond any feeling of like and dislike. As Krishna says in the Gita, to the yogi, heat and cold are the same. Pain and pleasure are the same. And you ask, how can this be without being dead? Without being so indifferent to this world that you're not even living in it anymore? And the way that that happens is that this interior consciousness, this peace, this inner knowing, this connection with God becomes stronger than the five senses, becomes stronger than any sense of like and dislike. And as a result, you transcend it. You go beyond it. Because now you're attuning yourself to something that is stronger, more powerful, more uplifting than the senses are. But as long as there's things in the world and of the senses that cause you to lose connection with God, you are not there yet. You have not yet achieved that perfection. And so more sadhana, more practice. The idea is when one is identified with the soul, one experiences everlasting bliss. See, this is what Master says. I am showing you how feeling is painful, because if you are above feeling, you will be in undiluted bliss. And if you are one with your feelings, you will have to reincarnate many times until you have feeling control. God wants you to remain here as His son, as His child. It's not a sex in this case. Son is a description of a metaphysical fact. You have to remain here as an immortal being. That's how God wants you to be, as an immortal being. An immortal being has no feeling of likes or dislikes. He has the feeling of His oneness with God. You have to watch all things that are happening with an entertained feeling of mind without being disturbed. And so you learn that this world is a lila. Now, this doesn't mean that you're laughing at other people's pain. No way. You feel compassion for other people's ignorance, for their pain. You want them to rise up into the same feeling. You have passion for this world and you have compassion for those who are in suffering. But you know that God is dwelling within all people and that God is gradually evolving that individual so that they can come into their oneness with God. You must look upon all experiences with an entertained feeling of the mind without being disturbed. You must look upon all experiences with a happy attitude. Now, if we go to a play and we're close to the stage, and somebody is going through a difficult experience, and they're a very good actor, it's a very good play, and we identify to some degree with the actor. But we know that this is a play. And so inwardly, we don't feel the same kind of pain for that individual, the actor, that we would, say, in our ordinary life, because we know that it's a play. And when we come out of that play, we say, wasn't that a good play? Now, it may have been a tragedy. But we say, isn't that good? Wasn't that well acted? Wasn't that a powerful message, a powerful statement? And we enjoy it, you see. Now, it may seem perverse to somebody who hadn't had that experience. How could you watch somebody suffering all the way through the play and then enjoy it and say that was a good play? It's because you understand that it's a play. And you understand in the larger cosmology that everything is of God and everything is evolving towards God. And that through the difficult circumstances that somebody else is going through, they too will evolve. And you will all come together one day in this feeling of enlightenment and of joy and of understanding the world. When you grow into enlightenment, it's not that your past has changed or that you forget your past in a way that removes the pain from it. You now understand your life and your many lives from a new perspective. And you see that everything that has happened has led you into this state of realization. And therefore, you feel gratitude for everything you've gone through. It changes the way that you see your past. And you have a fuller and more complete understanding of how this world is evolving. Master even says here that war is an inevitable kind of thing. It is like the world's excrement. It has to happen in order for the cleansing, because there's inharmony, there's out of balance, and that war is a natural result of that. Now, we don't like to hear that, because war is painful, it's difficult, none of us want that. And yet, it's a natural result of being out of harmony with God's greater laws. And as we look around the world, we know that this world is not in complete harmony. And so it is through this process of the good and the bad, the likes and the dislikes, that we're gradually brought into the higher divine mind. So let us aspire first within to harmonize ourselves with this highest divine truth. Take it in deeply. Allow it to transform you. Attune yourself to the highest spiritual light within you. And let it penetrate throughout the world. When Jesus said that this word needs to be spread all over the world, the gospel, the good news, he was speaking first and foremost inwardly. The world is your world consciousness, is your ego consciousness, is your body consciousness. And the word, or that purity of vibration of God, has to penetrate throughout the world. The word has to be spread until the entire world is converted into the image and likeness of that word. And this is an internal process. It is the transformation of the individual from the human to the divine. And that is why you are here. It is why we are here. So as you enter out into the world, carry that intention with you. And from moment to moment, put it into action. Don't excuse yourself. Don't make excuses for yourself. Put it into action. Strive with all your heart, mind, and soul for this higher beauty, for this higher truth. And God's grace will come in and allow for that transformation, and you will achieve it when you put your mind on God and put God first. Put God first. You please pray with me. O Heavenly Father. Divine Mother. I feel the wonder and the beauty of Thy glorious presence in every part of my being. My heart is bursting with my love for Thee. I kneel in adoration at Thy feet. And surrender myself to Thee. I feel the power of Thy perfection. Surging in every cell of my body. My mind and my intelligence are radiant with Thy healing light. My soul is filled with the ecstasy and bliss of my communion with Thee. I and my Father are one. Blessed Spirit, I am He. peace, bliss. Amen. May God's grace go with you, proceed before you, lifting you heart, mind, and soul into His presence, guiding you home always, until you feel that perfection throughout your being, throughout the world. Be it so.